I want to take a look at the end of the story of Yaakov and Esav and the bracha. It's definitely something that's there, but maybe something that we kind of don't look at all that often. Right? We know that Yaakov takes the bracha. Again, we could question whether it was okay to take the bracha, whether he stole the bracha, whether he didn't steal the bracha. Okay, fine. So putting that aside, Yaakov eventually gets the bracha, and then the first thing he does is he leaves. Question is, why is it that we have such a long story of Esav and his arrival? It doesn't really matter. In truth, all we need to hear is that his father says, I'm sorry, you don't get the bracha, it doesn't really matter, and, you know, you move on. So that's kind of what I want to try to take a look at a little bit tonight. All right, so here we go. Vahi kasher kila Yitzchak levarechad Yaakov. When Yitzchak is done blessing Yaakov, vahi ach yatzo yatza Yaakov mei pnei Yitzchak aviv, ve'esav achiv ba mitzedo. And when Yaakov leaves from his father, Esav, his brother, shows up from his hunt. Vayaskam hu matamim. So he also makes tasty food. Vayaveli aviv, he brought it to his father. Vayomer laviv, yakum aviv yochal mitzei bno, bavur tvarachani nafshecha. So he says to his father, get up, my father, and eat from the hunted food of your son in order so that your soul will bless me. So just like the slight nuances, Vayomer laviv, yakum aviv, right? He says, get up, my father. Whereas back in the, back when Yaakov comes in, it's like kum na shva, right? Like, please get up and sit. So there is like a slight nuance difference. Esav is a little bit rougher. Yaakov a little bit less rough. But obviously, that's not what's going to really set off Yaakov, Yitzhak. What's going to set off Yitzhak is he already had someone that showed up, and he already gave that person the bracha, and now all of a sudden, there's another person. So what happens? Vayomer lo Yitzhak aviv miata. So Yitzhak's father says to him, who are you? Vayomer ani bincha b'chorcha Esav. Right? So there's no like, anochi. But he says, Ani, I am your son, your firstborn, Esav. He makes it very, very clear who he is. So Yitzhak is terrified. So he says, wait a second. Who is the one that came already, that hunted? He brought it to me. I ate it. Before you got here, I blessed him, and gam baruch yeah, he keeps the bracha. Now, you have to imagine, at this point, Yitzhak has figured it out, right? Yitzhak has looked and said, wait a second. The first person came to me. I only have two kids. If the first one wasn't the real Esav, then that must have been Yaakov.
He never thought Yaakov would do that, so he was thinking maybe something.
Says so you're adding like a third person?
Yeah.
I who?
Lied to him. Why did it have to be his son?
Right. He got tricked. He's blind. He got faked out, and he thought this. Didn't he always think that Yaakov didn't have him in any thought? I mean, we said this before. That the two of them together were gonna have a partnership in creating Bnei Yisrael because they each had character traits that were required to be successful as a nation.
Uh-huh.
And Yaakov was missing this aggressive side to him. And he just didn't think he had it in him.
And it's easier for you, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. It's easier for you to accept that Yitzhak in his head is like thinking there's another person as opposed to, oh my God, Yaakov really had it in him all these years. Right, someone else came and, right, yeah. But you have to imagine at this point in time that Yitzhak realizes, I think I got this wrong. Right, like probably this is really Esav, and then the person before this was probably Yaakov. So Rashi adds in midrashically that when he, what happens? Like, what sets Yitzchak off? Because Yitzchak's words are very definitive. If he had ended his speech, "Beterem tavo va'avarachehu," right? Then that's just all factual.
How about the beginning of it?
Which part? You wouldn't be, like, if you thought that you just, like, interacted for, like, a good amount of time with someone, and then all of a sudden you realize, shoot, like, I gave away my fortune.
Well, it makes it seem like, if you, according to your interpretation, he thinks it's Yaakov now. He's thinking, that's the biggest mistake I could have possibly made.
He thinks the first one was Yaakov. Yeah. Right.
But also fear.
Like, he's now...
It's like he kept it in the family.
The worst thing ever.
Right.
It's so,
right.
Like, something like, oh, you know what? It's Yaakov. He fooled me, but good for him. No.
It's in the family. The I'm with David. This is like,
this is terrible.
Like, someone stole this. Like it's, I gave it up. It's out of the family.
How old were the boys? The boys now, like, yeah.
How old are they? So, they're for sure 40. And they, I'm saying, like, they have to be.
Fine.
Yeah, Esav got married at 40.
So, for 40 years at least, Yitzchak had this in his hand. Here's the plan. And it's just been entirely unknown.
Well, the question is, what really was the plan? Meaning, was the what he gives this bracha is like, I'm giving you the bracha of wealth. That doesn't necessarily mean that he thought that Yaakov wasn't going to get Birchas Avraham, the future of the Jewish people, right? Like, there is a
maybe,
bit...
Maybe that was the problem, that he meant for Yaakov that they have Avraham, but now he's not.
And he's like, shoot, the only bracha I have left is Birchas Avraham. I can't give that one to Esav. Right, except that he pulls a bracha out of his hat anyway, which we'll see.
I thought you were going to say
something else. No. Say again?
Bless him.
Good.
I thought you were going to say bless him, sorry.
So, yeah. So, I mean...
He was scared because Esav was mad.
And so what was it, what was his fear?
That he's going to kill
Esav.
That Esav was going to kill Yitzchak?
Esav was not a gentle... He was crushed, and he was a warrior, and you never know what a guy like that's going to do.
1 second. So this is the same Esav that said early in the Parsha that he's going to wait until Yitzchak dies before he kills his brother.
No, he hasn't said that yet. He's going to say that soon, right? Like this is
right.
He's going to.
But we know that he is begging for this bracha after he already lost the birthright.
Right, I mean, I think it's a... Right, I find it a stretch to think that he's going to kill his father just because he has this, like, really close bond with his dad. I mean, I would not be a shock... It's not a shock to me when he eventually says, I'm going to kill my brother.
Maybe he would kill him, but there's no... It doesn't have to result in Yitzhak's death. He could still be scared of his son.
Oh.
The guy has a bad temper.
Okay. To me, see, it's funny. I actually think that Rashi, although it's midrashic, it makes a lot of sense. See, what Rashi says is that he sees Gehenim at his feet, and he finally realizes who Esav is. I think that the Vayechara Yitzchak Harada Gdola Me'od is the realization that for the last bunch of years, which is similar to what Shmuel was saying, he really read it wrong.
Well, why would he be careful now? He'd be happy then. He gave the right bracha to the right person.
Right, so the question is he, is there like this fear in him that I can't believe I just totally read this, like I wasted 40 years of my life thinking one thing, training one person.
I don't know if fear is the right word.
His eyes are finally open.
Yeah.
I don't know if fear is the right word.
That?
Yeah, fear is not the right word.
I don't know if fear means fear or it's shaking.
I'm not sure. But Rashi does add in a lot of it. The problem I have is still, what do you do with the words Gam Baruch Yehiye? Meaning, like, I think he's able to say, listen, this is, I'm going to just share with you what happened. Someone came in here. They fed me, and I blessed them. But why does he have to put in the words Gam Baruch Yehiye, where it's like this definitive...
Kavana. Because you could say maybe the bracha is only totally with proper Kavana. I didn't have the proper Kavana, but it's still going to be totally.
No, right. So what he's saying is I'm like I'm stamping it. I'm like telling you this. Okay, right. So, but why at this point in time does he like immediately like flip on that? Like he just realizes, wait a second. Asaph hasn't said anything to him yet to make him feel that way, and yet he says, Gam Baruch Yihyeh. So I think that that's just something that we have to think about. I don't have an answer, but I think it's what to think about.
But he also knows Asaph's nature. And he's just going to assume that. He's going to say, like, no, just reverse what you did and give it to me. You know, like, nullify it and give it to me.
Right, but Asaph's going to do that, and his father isn't going to be like, no, I'm sorry. Right? Like, there is the dig in, which is like, you know, it doesn't matter what you say to me. I'm not changing my mind. You can cry. You could do all the things that like a teenager, an adult, or whatever would do, right? A 63-year-old would do. And it doesn't matter because I'm not budging at all, right? But that's not what he does because in just, you know, at first he's like, I'm sorry. There's nothing I could do. You're stuck. And then he like all of a sudden says, well, I guess maybe the situation's fluid, we could work with it, right? Like, and then he like completely changes course. So it's a little hard to understand where he's coming from. So lamed aleph, kishmoa Esav edivrei aviv, vayitzak tzaka gedola umara ad ma'ot. When Esav hears his father's words, he cries out, tzaka gedola umara ad ma'ot. We have very similar words in the Megillah, right? Mordechai does the same thing. The Medrash says that it's because of this, that it's Achashverosh, I'm sorry, it's Esav's descendant, Haman, that does it back to Mordechai, right? So what goes around comes around. So what happens? So he says, your brother has come, b'mirma, v'yikach b'irachatech, and he took your bracha. Now, b'mirma, what does mirma mean? Right, that's what it sounds like. And yet, what does Rashi do? Rashi cleans it up. Says, no, no, no. Mirma is not deceit, which is actually what we usually would translate it. But Rashi says, b'chachma. Right? Your brother was smart. And he did this. So now, what happens? So, Pasuk Lamed Vav, now this is where Rashi adds in a lot. Vayomer hachi karashmo Yaakov. He says, ah, that's why you called him Yaakov. Vayagveni zeh pamayim. He tricked me twice. Epechorati lakach. He took my bechora. Vineyata lakach birchati. And now he took my bracha also. So Rashi adds in, there's a conversation that's going on here. Meaning Esav's saying a lot of stuff. What is he really saying? He's saying to his dad, ah, oh, I can't believe he tricked me twice. Oops, right? And then his dad says, wait a second. What do you mean twice? He only tricked you once, right now. No, he says, he took my bechora. And then his father says, wait, what? He says, yeah, he took my bechora. And then he says, okay, fine. So now, l'mafreya, he says, yeah, that's why I can comfortably say, Gam Baruch, yeah, the bracha is his. Right? He shouldn't lose it because it is deservedly his. So then he ends off by saying, Halo atzalta li bracha. Did you not save me something? So, right, this is like Esav's last like hope. That there's gotta be something. Can't you give me something? So what he then says is, Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Vayan Yitzchak, Vayomer le'Esav. So Yitzchak answers, he says to Esav, Hein gvir samti lach. I made him your boss. Ve'kolachav natati lo lavadim. And your servants to him. Ve'dagan, ve'tirosh, smachtiv. And he has all the, he's going to have the grains and the wine of the land. U'l'chaifo ma'aseh b'ni. What am I supposed to do? He has all the fortunes belong to him. One, and even if they didn't all belong to him, because we know that like the fortunes of the world are obviously nearly immeasurable. It's not really that easy to say that there's nothing left. Yaakov doesn't get all the wealth in the world. He says, but the bigger problem is I made you his servant, and Mashakana Eved, Kanarabo. So whatever you get, whatever I give to you, is going to go to him. I used to tell my students, it's like if you have like your hands open and someone's hands are underneath them, right? So what happens? You drop it, it goes in, it's you almost feel like you have it for a second, but it goes right through your hands and goes to the next person. That's the concept of Mashakana Evid Kanarabo. So you don't get it. There's nothing to give to you. And that's where the psukim should end, which should still leave us with a lot of questions. The biggest one being, why are these psukim so drawn out? Why can't it just simply go like this? Esav comes in and says, you know, Dad, where's my, I'm here, right? You need to know that he shows up. And then his dad says, I'm sorry, you don't get anything. And then, like, just, we don't need the Vayecharad. Who cares? We don't need the Vayitzak. We don't need all the crying. We don't need all the emotion. What?
We don't need to know he showed up either. As soon as Yaakov got the bracha, done.
Well, we somehow need to get from the fact that he does show up, because that's inevitable, to I'm going to kill my brother.
We also know what brother, why his brother was away.
As soon as you know Yaakov got the bracha, and Esav says, okay, I'm going to kill him, you can figure out, okay.
Right, but this—it just seems like this is a lot.
I don't think it's just a matter of Esav getting the bracha. The Torah is trying to tell us; it's trying to make us feel his pain.
Good.
He was in a huge amount of pain.
Right.
And
so
for that, we're still paying.
Yeah. So it's interesting because when we think about it, Esav's first—and that's a really important point that Henry makes. Esav's first emotion is not anger, it's not revenge, but his first emotion is pain. Esav is really pained by this. Why is he pained?
To his selfishness, that he lost out on what he thought materially should be his. So yeah, it feels good, but it's not like driven by some altruistic lever.
Well, it could also be that he just realized how much he gave away for a bowl of lentils.
Right. I mean, that must have been really good soup. You would have to hope.
Yeah. But that, I think that's the realization.
That's
a
bonus.
I
made
one
in the class in the crock pot today for a class. Lentil soups.
Last year, one kindergarten, when we were allowed to, you know, give out food around the building, some teacher gave me a bowl of lentil soup. I took a picture of it, sent it to my brother. I was like, Bechora? He's like, it better be really good soup for that. So the question is, why do we need so much here? Why is it that the first feeling, the first that we get, is the pain of Esav? And the truth is, I would really ask one other question, which is a question that I'll never forget. Aaron Miller asked this question, I believe, either the first time or the second time around that we did Toldos. But he's like, objectively, when you look at Esav, why does Esav have to be so bad? And the truth is, I would honestly say, if you look at the psukim, so what is Esav? Esav's dying of hunger. He's dying of hunger. Now, the Ibn Ezra, which I shared last night, the Ibn Ezra has a wild pshat that says that this is just one of the proofs that Yitzhak was poor. There was no food in the house. Esav comes back from a long, tiring day in the field. The fridge is empty. The cupboard is bare. And the only thing in the house is that soup. But why? Because if there was something else to eat, what would he have done? Right. Like, you know, he would have chugged the Sunny Delight. Would have been all good. And right, he doesn't need to give up his bechora. So you could say, again, you can make the argument either way, but you can make the argument that Esav was in a vulnerable point and his brother conned him.
There was bread there.
But what else? But what else do we see from Esav? Not much. Esav's a hunter. Why is that automatically a bad thing? Now, we say it's a bad thing because somehow, like, hunting in the Torah does not amount to, like, a good profession. But again, that's like another question. Like, why does he have to be so bad? And here, these psukim, the raw emotion that he shows, kind of leaves us wondering if he really is that bad.
I think the fact that the pasuk tells you, although, yes, Yitzchak loved him, the fact that Rivka didn't. A mother's love for a child is like no other love. And for her to basically say, he's not mine. he's mine, but that's not the one that I love. I love this one. Means there was something fundamentally flawed about Esau.
But does Rivka really not love Esav?
I don't know.
Or is the pasuk of Rivka Ohevet Yaakov somewhat similar to Vayehav Yaakov et Rachel? Right, Yaakov doesn't hate Leah, but Leah, if you just read baby namings, right, she's like, he really hates me. First I saw he hates me, then I heard he hate me, then I hoped by number three he would not hate me and would want to cling to me, and by the fourth kid I thank God that now maybe there's a reason he won't hate me. Right? So that's really a question. Is it possible that Rivka loved Esav also, but she loved Yaakov more? Rabbi Riskin has it's a crazy, crazy story. He talks about a neighbor that they had in either, I don't remember if it was in when he was the rabbi in Lincoln Square or when he moved to Efrat, but there was a neighbor that he became very close with. She was a Holocaust survivor. And one day she sat with him and said, I just want to let you guys know that the greatest day of my life was the day that I was like rounded up and taken to the camps. And he's like, can you say that again? Like, I think maybe I didn't understand you. And she goes, no, it was the greatest day of my life. And he goes, how could that possibly be? So she says, listen, my parents had two daughters. It was very clear that I was the less loved kid. If there was, you know, I was a little bit rebellious. My sister was a tzadekes. If there was like, you know, the bread, right? There was a little bit of butter and a little bit of margarine. They'd be like, your sister, she davened so hard. She needs the butter to give her the strength. Take the margarine. And this was like the story of her life. And the Nazis came into her house and, you know, kicked her father to the side and were getting ready to grab her. And her mother said, no, leave her, take me instead. And the girl said, that was the first time in my entire life I realized that my mother loved me. So that's how crazy it is, but that's, I think, very much a possibility of where both Yaakov and Esav were vis-a-vis their fathers. So it's interesting, vis-a-vis their parents. Interestingly, that Rabbi Riskin takes that story and said the whole purpose of the beginning of this parasha is for what? Is Yaakov is saying, I'm just so desperate for acceptance. Dad, you want me to be like Esav? You want me to show you that I could be, be Bemirma? Fine, I'll show you. I have it in me. But now, the end of the parasha makes us wonder if perhaps it's the opposite. Is that there is this piece of Esav where he's coming from the other side. So, we've got a lot of questions. But I think the most important question to try to figure out is, objectively, is Esav bad? And I think that it's hard. It's really, really hard to find a reason to write Esav off. So, if you... And I think if you skip ahead to Vayishlach, which is the next source, it becomes even harder to write him off. So what happens? Yaakov comes back. Why he has to meet Esav, I've always been bothered by. Like, just go the other way. Right? Like, avoid him. You don't have to go. But he goes, and he feels that he has to exercise the demons inside him and say, Esav, it's on me. I'm sorry, but let's move on. So what happens? He sends gifts all night long. He fights with the angel all night long. Rabbi Sachs says it's possible that when he's fighting with the angel, he's really fighting with himself. Right? He's fighting this inner turmoil in himself where he's just pained by what Esav means to him. And then, Vayomer Milcha Kol Amachne Hazeh Asher Pagashti. Esav says to him, what is all this stuff that I met? Vayomer Limtzochein Beinei Adoni. He says, I sent this all to you to do what? I wanted to find favor in your eyes. Vayomer Esav yesh li rav, because I have everything. I have a lot. Achi hi lecha asher lach. He says, take, it's all yours. Achi. Right, so, achi yehi lecha asher, I'm sorry. Yesh li rav achi yehi lecha asher lach. Right, I have a lot, my brother. Take, right, whatever you want, it's yours. Which, some will tell you is what? That's Esav's saying, the bracha is yours. Vayomer Yaakov, al na, im namatzadi chay meinecha v'lakachta min chatib miyadi, kealkein ra'ita panecha kero pene Elokim v'tirtzeini. So he says to him, right, I, you take the bracha, because when I see you, it's like seeing the face of God. Kachna birchat yeshu v'at l'cha, ki chanani Elokim v'chay yishli kol. I have everything, I don't need it, it's all yours. Vayivtzar bo v'yikach, and he pushes him and he takes him. Vayomer nisa v'neelcha v'elcha l'negdecha. Let's travel together. Esav wants him to come home with him. Now Yaakov's weary of coming home because he fears what? Esav might be out to get him. But if you look at these psukim, it does really seem, I mean, other than like the medrash of Vayichabek Vayinashek, that he hugged and he kissed him, was really, he was biting his neck and trying to kill him, which is so not clear from the psukim other than the dots on top of it. Right, but what we see is it seems to us that Esav has no grudge. In fact, it's possible that Esav really is just what we would call a Noach Lichos. He's just one of those people that flies off the handle easily, but afterwards, Noach Lirtzos, he lets it go really quickly. So I don't know. So now let's take a look. We actually did not finish.
Never happened before.
We didn't finish the psukim from above. So let's go back to pasuk lamed chet. Vayomer Esav l'aviv, habracha achat hi lecha avi. Is there one bracha maybe you have for me? Bracheni gam ani avi. Dad, I need a bracha. Vayisai esav kolo vayevk. Esav lifts his voice and cries. Esav is really broken. Vayan yitzhak avi vayomer elav. Yitzhak says, fine, I have a bracha. What is it? I give you from Mishmanei Haaretz. Now it's interesting. What's Mishmanei Haaretz? The fat of the land. What he's saying to him is, you're not getting all the Shmanei Haaretz. You're getting Mishmanei Haaretz. Meaning there is a lot in the world, and I'm willing to say that you can have some, but I'm also willing to say that your brother could have some. V'alchar b'chatichye. You're going to live by your sword. You're going to work. Your brother will work. You'll work for your brother. But when your brother messes up, so what's going to happen? The yoke will be removed from your neck. Fine. He gets a bracha in the end. It's an interesting bracha. It seems almost like he gets a bracha, but it's not really a bracha. Your bracha is you're going to be subservient to Yaakov so long as Yaakov does what he has to do. But as soon as Yaakov does not do what he has to do, game over. Okay. So, those are our psukim. I want to take a look at one more source. Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. It's the forgotten Perek in Parshas Vayishlach. It's the one that nobody really has anything to say about. Nobody really teaches it because who cares? It's just a lot of family members of Esav. But it says at the end, Ve'elam lachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lefnei melach melech levnei Yisrael. These were the kings that ruled in Edom before the Jewish people had a king on their own. The road to success for Esav is very, very, very quick. It's not long before he multiplies, he has kings, and he is wildly successful. The road for Yaakov is much, 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 much longer. Why is that? So that's another question. So now I want to try to unpack our questions just a little bit. The last source, we'll take a look at the last source on the page. Lo tetaev adomi ki achichahu. You're not allowed to hate the Edomi, the family of Esav, because he's your brother. Lo tetaev mitzri ki gerita b'artzo. You also can't hate the Egyptian because you were in his land. They're not locked out of marrying into the Jewish people. They just have to wait a little bit. But then ultimately they can marry in. Esav is our brother. Kiachichahu. He's really our brother. We're not allowed to fight him. We're not allowed to start up with him. The only problem is that the Medrash comes in and muddies the waters, because the Medrash basically tells us, other than the Midrash and the talk about how Esav is the paradigm for Kibud Av Va'Em, everybody else, all the Midrashim tell us how Esav is really bad. Why is that? So Tzvi Hirsch Chayos, I believe the Maritz Chayos, says the following. He said, biblical figures are supposed to be role models. It's much easier for us to deal with role models when they're in black and white terms. This one's good, this one's bad. So therefore, I put it in front of you and I say, who do you want to be like? Esav is black and white bad. Yaakov is black and white good. So nobody's going to be like, I think Esav is where I want to gravitate. He's black and white bad. The problem is...
you also have infamous pregnancy.
You have that also...
bias is a lot.
But what does that even mean? Right, that nevuah, right? Shnei goyim bevineich, shnei lumim mimeayichi paregu. Two great nations will come from you. Ulo'o milo miyamatz v'rav yavot tzair. One will be stronger than the other. Right, so yeah, so the medrash is the overlay that like completely biases us before he's even born, right? Because before he's born, we know what? That one kid kicked. That's actually really Aaron Miller's question. How do we know that the baby that kicked was Yaakov by the shul and Esav by the Avodah Zarah? Maybe it's the opposite. When they came out, they assumed automatically one way with one and one with the other. And that, like the nurture versus nature, is what ends up making them who they are. Okay, so, right, Tzvi Hirsch, Chayes says basically that, okay, it's supposed to be black and white, but it's not so black and white. So how do we understand all this? What are we supposed to do with this? And why is Esav, in this story, at least this piece that we looked at tonight, why does he paint himself, or at least seem to paint himself, in a good light? You feel bad for him. It's hard to walk away from these psukim when you look at them, certainly in a vacuum, without the psukim beforehand, and without any of the medrash. It's really, really hard to look at it and not feel bad for him. All right, so I want to give you two answers. One is my own, and the other one is Rabbi Sachs's. I'll start with my own, because I think his is better. So, this past week, all right, still got time. This past week on, I think it was Monday, I was like getting ready to leave school. I was walking up the steps and I was like, all right, it's 4:00. You have no idea how long it is to work in a school under these conditions. 8 hours feels like 40. Like the second the kids leave, I'm like, done. So I'm ready to leave and a teacher comes running in saying, oh my God, somebody's having a seizure in the parking lot, one of our teachers. So I went running out there, and I've been like in camp for enough years, like I've seen some stuff, but I've never actually been next to someone trying to make sure that they don't slam their head in the pavement, right, while they're having a full-out seizure. It's traumatic. I still, every time I close my eyes, like replay that over and over and over again. What I thought was amazing, besides the fact that two people called at exactly the same time, 911 and Hatzalah came much, much, much quicker. Besides that, which was, you know, a big Kiddush Hashem. But what stuck out in my mind is so unbelievable is Hatzalah shows up and I was like, all right, thank God, like my job is more or less done. Now I just have to like, you know, make sure that everybody, else stays away. So the woman is like holding her arm up like that. And I thought it was unbelievable. She had a medical bracelet on. She's still in the midst of her like seizure and she's holding her arm up like that so that like the Hatzalah people, and she's really not even close to like knowing what's going on, so that they'll know that she has a medical condition. And what struck me is that there is a moment where the power to live and the power to survive becomes so strong that like, despite the lack of clarity, despite the fact that you have no idea what's going on, it still beats it out. And I thought, to just make you see how my head works, I thought it afterwards, not in the moment, but a few minutes later, I thought, that's pshat in our story. See, Esav spends his entire life wondering, who am I? What am I? Which one am I? But he has this moment where he realizes, I'm going to lose it all. So his true self comes shining out. He says, Dad, do you see my pain? Do you see who I really am? I am a good person. And maybe that's why when it's all over, if you were Yitzchak, it's not that your kid threw a temper tantrum and fine, all right, here you go, just leave me alone. It's the opposite. I think what he's saying, what Yitzchak is saying to him is, fine, I see. I realize who you truly are. And because of that, I have to give you a bracha. And that's where he gives him, Hinemi Shmanei Haaretz. But there's another possibility. Rabbi Sacks says that the Torah is actually teaching us at this point a profound lesson. And it's the message of all of Sefer Bereishis, which we've touched on from Rabbi Sacks so many times in so many different contexts. Bereishis is all about chosenness. It's all about rejecting one and taking the other. Chosenness is hard. It's hard to choose one when you have to let go of the other. But Esav finally realizes, wait a second. When the bracha went to his brother, he realized, oh my God, my dad chose him over me. Now he doesn't realize that being chosen is really complicated. Because Perek Lamed Vav, Lamed Aleph, that the reason for that pasuk is to tell you that when you're chosen like Esav, it's like the easy pass lane, 30 miles an hour, you don't have to stop. When you're chosen like Yaakov, it's like the old toll booth. And there's a person in front of you fumbling around to get the exact change. And you wait there for hours and hours and hours. That's where Yaakov is. Yaakov is going to take a lot longer to get there. But in the end, Yaakov will be chosen. The psukim are a moment to reflect for us the pain that Esav feels when he realizes he's not chosen. And his mother kind of had been hinting at this for years. And this is the moment where he realizes, gee, my mom was telling me all these years that I wasn't going to be it. It's a hard one. But what the Torah is stressing is that, A, you have to realize the pain that the other feels when they're not chosen. But you have to also realize that the Torah is stressing something equally important. That just because you're not chosen doesn't mean that you're not valuable and doesn't mean that you don't count. Esav matters. He just matters a little bit less. But Rav Kook, I think, really takes it one step further. And I think this is really the beauty of the whole story is that Esav and everybody else misunderstands what chosenness is. Being chosen doesn't make us more special. Being chosen means that we have a more intimate relationship, perhaps. But with that more intimate relationship comes the responsibility that's thrust upon us. There's a lot more on our plate when we're chosen. Yaakov is going to find out in the long road ahead that it's not so simple for him to be chosen. But what's important to realize is that God is still the God of all, who cares for everyone. That's really the message of this whole parsha. The message of this whole parsha is that you're going to have moments where someone is going to have to be selected as the one that's going to be a little bit closer to God. But when that happens, it's painful for the other person. And we do need to feel that person's pain. But at the same time, we also have to realize that for those that are chosen, it doesn't make the other people any less human and any more or less connected to God. They have that bond and that connection to God because God, after all, is the God of all. Rav Kook ends, and with this I will end, Rav Kook ends by saying that through Avraham, you're connected to Avraham, to Yaakov, which will become the Jewish people, Esav, which will become Christianity, Yishmael, which will become Islam. They're going to spend a lot of years fighting as to who is really the chosen one. He says in the end of days, what they're going to recognize is the chosenness is this responsibility and this intimacy. Perhaps the Jewish people do have more of that than anybody else, but that doesn't make them any less the children of God, and that doesn't make them any less valuable. And perhaps that's really what is pshat in the Rambam of what's going to happen in the end of days. In the end of days, what is Mashiach? Mashiach is not going to be this cataclysmic end to the world as we know it. But instead, what Mashiach is going to be is you eliminate all the fighting in the world. Once there's a recognition by all, V'yadu kol amei aretz ki shem Hashem, everybody recognizes God and God's sovereignty over the land and the people, at that point in time, there's no longer a reason to have fights. There's no longer a reason to have wars, because everybody recognizes that they are valuable in the eyes of God.